Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Off the ball.
Rugby.
Have you seen the way Scotland play? Scotland, this has been waiting. This has been coming. They are so good. And yet I still can't sit here and say they're definitely going to win in Dublin.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to reflect on an interesting international window that definitely results wise probably didn't go how most Irish fans hoped that it would, but there were some positives to take out of it, so we'll be looking at that, and we will also be taking a look at the FAI's strategy plan for the next couple of years, which was released by David Carell today, just to see what it means in the context of the women's team internationally, something that we talk about quite a lot on this podcast, and also what pathways it's going to open to players here in the league, and also those who want to develop to potentially reach the senior stages. Joining me to look at that is Karen Duggan and Scarlett Heron. Guys, very nice to see you again.
You too, Kathleen.
Scarlett, you were off gallivanting around Hampden earlier today for a media day. Did you get to the infamous spot where Amber Barrett managed to give us all the lift that the country needed?
Yeah, I was trying to gain access to that side of the pitch to try get on and just like give it a wee kiss or something just to praise it for being good to us. But no, I didn't get over to the glory spot. But it was a good day out anyway.
How do you find those media days when you're doing them? Like, are you incredibly awkward? Like, was it a combo of photos and talking to media, or mostly just talking to media?
Yeah, no, to be fair, I think those things usually take all day, but they were really efficient with it, just like photographs and then on to interviews. But all the outlets were, it was all pretty short and sweet, which was great. Not used to, I feel like those things usually go on for like 4 hours, but no, it was good.
That's good. Well, you obviously have your media training well done.
Not used to it. Yeah. I know, it's funny. I feel like you guys helped me do that. You guys helped me put my words into action. So it's great.
Did you have the temptation to take the microphone off one of them and just like turn it around and be like, no, I'm used to being on the other side.
Yeah, be like, what did you think about that? Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of strange, isn't it? When you have to switch it up and you're actually being interviewed instead of interviewing. It's a weird one.
Are you conscious then of, you know, the way we're always giving out about sometimes how boring interviewees are because they just say the generic thing? Or do you still have to be like, right, I better keep this fairly vanilla in case?
I know there's some things you just can't, like, I feel like every interview I was doing is like you're saying the same thing and then you're trying to be different and say something like a bit out there or whatever, like, but you're nearly trying too hard then to like say something that will catch the eye or like say something that isn't born. Yeah. But yeah, it's tough, like, because some things
it's very hard pre-match as well because you have to impossible. Be like, you know, we're going into it, we're trying to win, you know, you say all the right things like the girls did before, well, particularly after the France match, it was like, oh, we're disappointed and this, and then going into the Holland game, we are going to go for it and we want to get points and stuff.
It's all the buzzwords. It's like, oh yeah, like we're taking one game at a time, you know.
Yeah.
It's all that rubbish.
It's funny, I remember
everyone's media trained to the match these days.
Yeah,
I remember ahead of the Euros in England doing like the England home camp media day, and the way they set it up is basically that every journalist that's there pretty much is given a player, and then you're given like 2 minutes with the player, and then everyone shifts. So all the players shift down one, and then you get whoever is next in the line. But by the time you'd gone through the entire squad, you were almost like able to predict what the answer was going to be because every line was exactly the same. Yeah. And like, it's fair enough, it's pre-tournament, there's only so much you can say. They were obviously favourites going into it as well, but didn't want to build up the hype too much. So I'd say days like that where you're being interviewed by, so like, what's that? That's nearly like 23 different outlets. Plus they had, say, the likes of Sky and BBC and whoever else were doing their own separate interviews off to the side. I'd say you go home and your brain is just absolutely fried.
Because it's all the same questions as well. There was one guy today, I think from the Herald, and he asked me about like Gaelic football, and I was like, oh yes. I was like, something different.
He got the best answer of the day,
Yeah.
clearly.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, we shall move on to the match now. Speaking of people giving interesting answers after games or before games, and it wasn't the results that we wanted over the course of the two games. And, I was over in Utrecht. I was in Tala for the game, and then I was over in Utrecht for the other game and chatted to some of the players afterwards. And it's actually the most devastated I've seen some of them in a while, which I thought was interesting, because we've had a few devastating moments over the last while in terms of not qualifying and things. And I was on the night obviously upset at the way the results had gone, but when I was flying back, I was thinking to myself, and I was like, I feel that I should feel more upset than I actually do about those two games, because to me, there was just so much progress and positivity largely over the two games. Like, I know it definitely wasn't there in the first half in the game against Netherlands, but I would say majority wise, it was the sort of football that we've been crying out to see for a long time against two excellent oppositions. I don't know if I'm alone in that optimism or if you guys share it.
I do, and yes, we're disappointed with the results, but if we're being realistic, bar the first half of the Netherlands game, I think we played to our potential, and that's all we can ask. And maybe that's a bit unfair as well, but we're not at the level of France and Netherlands yet. And while it was so disappointing on the night that we were able to get into the 80th minute with that hope that we were going to take points from it, when you step back, like I was saying, I think Netherlands are kind of at the stage where we want to progress to next. They're not quite in that like top echelons of the European powerhouses, which I think France are in. They just didn't really show it in Tala. But really good performances, and I think the players are bringing to the shirt what we need them to bring. They're being competitive in League A, but League A is a step above where we're at. League B is a little bit below. There's an in between
I was
that's
chatting to
not
Emma
there.
Duffy from the 42 after the game. We were going back to our hotel, and she was like, "We just need like a halfway league between League B and
B and a
League A,
half.
like a League A
3.5.
0.5 or something."
So like we are kind of in that in between space in terms of our ability, but in terms of what the team could give in executing a game plan. And I was really impressed by like fitness levels and their application and everything like that. There's always going to be the questions afterwards, how do we get to that level? And I will talk about that when we come to the strategy. But if we concentrate just on the games and what the girls could give, they gave that, I would say.
Scarlett, what were your thoughts coming out of the team games?
Yeah, I think the France game is where you can probably take the most positives out of it. I thought we were really, really good. Like, I think the one thing that you could say is that when we did get the ball, we could have been better in possession in terms of just our ball retention. I feel like there was times where we did win it back and we maybe had more time on the ball than we thought, and we heard Anna Patton talk about that even in the after the Netherlands game, about how they just need to be more confident on it. But no, I thought like we showed really good sparks in both games. Like, I think Emily Murphy's probably the best thing to come out of the two results, just her performance and how she's grown into that team and matured into her role, really. Yeah, and then I think as well, just having missed Denise, she was such a miss in the second game, but just that midfield in general, the way that Carla set them up, just the shift that those three had to put in for the 90 minutes, I thought was insane. Like, I think Risha Shiva's stats was up online, and like the running they had to do, especially in the France game when they were kind of doubling up out wide, because we spoke about, like, we've seen the French, the way that they go forward, especially through the wide areas, and how they'd narrowed the pitch and everything pre-game. So I think for the midfield, I think they put on a Trojan effort for both the games. Really, really impressive. And then obviously going forward, we can probably offer a bit more. We were really unlucky, especially the France game with that chance with Denise in the last few seconds. But I think there's lots to build on. Like, it's, I think you're right to be really optimistic. Obviously, Poland got that draw, which isn't great for us. Yeah. It really puts the emphasis of importance on those two games now in a few weeks.
I think what you're saying there in terms of the ball retention, yes, obviously we really want to see that. But I think with the players we're putting on the pitch, we're doing that so that they can put in the shift. I think we're prioritising the ability to cover ground and win dirty ball over what we do in possession. Because again, I think that's the next step that we're not at yet. And I don't think we have a player. We need three Denises in midfield to be able to do that. And you could kind of tell the support play and stuff wasn't quite there in the Netherlands game that it was in the France game, because it's so hard to play the ball into someone's feet and then get under it to support. And I think we struggled a little bit with that. In the start of the Netherlands game, you saw a lot more gesticulating and being like, I don't know what we're doing. And it was kind of the recipe that was the same for the goal. Then it was kind of like, whose player is it? Who's taking who? We're all pointing at who should pick up the runner. So it was a bit more chaotic. So I don't know if we can improve massively technically in terms of ball retention, but maybe in terms of calmness, there is bits to improve there. But like you say, you'd rather have probably a Shiva on the pitch to do what she did against these big teams than possibly, I assume that's why she's being picked over the likes of Arusha, who we know is quite technical.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the fact that they went with Lucy Quinn as the kind of replacement in there for Denise Clubb, so the rest of the team didn't change? I just know when the team sheets came around the media centre, it was probably the one name that every single person in there didn't expect to see.
Yeah, I think there was rumours of Anna Patton going in, wasn't there, and stuff like that. But I think they're right not to change the backline as much as possible. I assume the thinking behind it is that Lucy can bring energy and can cover ground and kind of is used to joining in the attack, we'll say, because she had always played higher on the left in the previous games. I don't think it was quite the right position for her. I do think Emily Murphy probably worked a little bit better in there. But then I think you would have lost Emily Murphy's physicality and pace up front, which again was a good outlet. So it was always going to be a tough ask for who was going to fill it. I think Lucy did find it tough, but I also think that what Netherlands, they were pretty slick on the ball, you have to say, in the first half. While they didn't cut through us and didn't create clear-cut chances, their possession and how they definitely utilised the pulling a midfielder out wide and trying to stretch us a little bit better than what France did. They obviously looked at the France game and gave it the respect that it deserved based on the girls' performance there. So they learned a lot from that first game as well and how to tire us out and drag us. And we were a bit all over the place in the first half. But again, to come back out against that crowd in the second half and kind of correct that, it's kudos to the team. And like you say, I'm very positive about where the team is. I'm just not sure where overall football is in Ireland after that. You know, if this team doesn't get to this World Cup and we look at the age profile of it and we also look at how many home-based players are in that certain team, what comes next is a big question. Maybe we shouldn't go there. Maybe we should just enjoy this campaign, and we have the comfort blanket of the playoff anyway. So I'm trying to become a more positive person. So I'm going to ignore the rest.
This is a big change, Karen. In 4 years.
Everyone's saying that to me. Like, what's happened? I was like, I'm sick of myself. I need some optimism. We haven't had sunshine in 5 months. Something to look forward to.
That is very fair. And as you said, there are like massive positives to be taken from the two games. I think depending on how this campaign goes, we could very easily be reflecting on those two games and be like, Jesus, that was the two best games of football that we've played in a long time.
Poland will be so telling because we'll have the ball. You'd imagine. And that's the bit we're always a bit like, we always do play well against the big teams, generally. When the team is as cohesive and as together as this team look. I think in the past two or three camps, they look a lot more like a collective from the outside. Obviously, I'm only going by like what you hear and what people's tone of voice in their interviews and Instagram and stuff like that. But it does seem to be a strong collective group there.
No, I definitely get that sense from talking to various different players. Now, obviously, no one's going to turn around and be like, I'm woefully unhappy.
I know, but there's tone, you know,
Yeah,
under the
but there
previous
is. There's a
regime, there
way.
was tone. At the start of the League B, it wasn't quite as enthusiastic, you would
No. But I think that was also a case of everyone getting to know each other a little bit in terms of, coaching staff, the players, probably not fully knowing, the style of
Did you see
football
the
that
amount of
Carlo.
staff, by the way? Bloody
More
hell.
staff than players.
That's a good thing, though, Karen. That's the sort of
It
progress
is
that
a
we
good
want to
thing. It
see.
is. We just need it to filter down
Yeah, no,
lots.
that is fair. Scarlett, you mentioned Emily Murphy there, and I know, Karen, you were saying about potentially starting her in midfield over Lucy Quinn. Carlo Ward did talk about that post-match and said it was something that the team had considered, or like the coaching team had considered, but they decided to stick with where she was just because they thought that she could cause a little bit of damage, cause a little bit of chaos. Now, we did see her kind of drop a bit more as the game went on, but what is it that you've seen, Scarlett, in terms of the change in her game in particular? Like, obviously her speed was so crucial to for us in the game against France. She didn't quite have the same sort of balls that she was getting in the Netherlands game. I think probably partly because Denise wasn't there supplying them, but what was it that made her such a standout for you?
Well, I think one of the things is the pace you mentioned there, and then just when she got on the ball, like she'd take us forward, she'd get us all back, like all forward up the pitch, a good 20 or 30 yards at times. And she's always, we don't probably have enough of these players. Maybe it's just the way that we develop our players at home, but not that Emily Murphy's a home base player, but her head's always up and she's always looking forward. Her first thought's always, can I go forward? Can I look for the next pass to go forward? Can I get us up the pitch? Can I get a shot away? Which I think is really positive. And it's a player that we probably don't have enough on. She just, I think the difference in her is probably just confidence. Like, we've seen her now grow into her position at Newcastle and she's scoring goals there. She seems to, really be coming into herself, and like becoming a massive player for them in the championship. So I think probably just playing club football, which is another conversation topic of this national team, and it just goes to show the difference, because I even seen that Carla Ward was thinking that it was going to leave her out of the camp pre-Christmas, I think for the Belgium fixtures, and then she went to St James's Park and watched her in a game, and just she blew her away. So it's just goes to show what playing for your club week in week out can do for a player. And obviously we've seen that with Emily Murphy, and she's nearly, going to start every game now. I'd say she's probably one of the first names on the team sheet, so it's testament to her. And that assist for Katie's goal in the France game was great. Just getting forward and that way to ball through to Katie was great. So
Yeah, she was. It was definitely the best I've seen her play in person since she got her first cap. The only thing I would say that I would have loved to have seen more from her, particularly in the France game, because again, she probably didn't have the same opportunities to do it against Netherlands, and actually did it a little bit more, I have to say. It felt like she would get these brilliant balls, she would get in behind the French defense, and then she would almost be looking over her shoulder for like a Katie or a Denise to pass to take the shot on. And in my head, I was like, you are in the best position right now to take that shot. You can do it because you've got yourself into that position. Go for it. And I felt there was just that little bit of hesitation when she would get the ball first, and then that just gave them enough time to kind of get down on her a little bit and snuff out any chances that happened. So that's the only thing personally I would have loved to have seen a bit more of from her, because I think she'd be more than capable. And as we've seen, goals from play are hard to come by at times. If you were to take one thing away from these two fixtures then, Scarlett, what's the main takeaway in your head?
Well, I think it'll be the confidence within the camp. I know the girls were disappointed after the Netherlands game, but even listening to back to your interviews, Kathleen, that you did with them, there seems to be that growing confidence of, you know, we can compete and we can compete against these big teams. For me, and I'd say it's the same for you. It's going to be, how do we play now against Poland? It's going to be a different opposition. Obviously, still a very strong opposition, but not as maybe powerful and don't have the squad depth that the likes of France and Netherlands will have. And we'll have the ball a bit more, which is where I was kind of looking at the ball retention and just sort of what we can do when we have the ball to go forward and to get us up. I think we didn't see enough of Abby Larkin through really no fault of her own. I just think we can get her on a bit earlier, maybe start her. And I think like her and Kira Caruso are very different players, so it'll be it's a toss up. Like I think Emily Murphy is, as I said, kind of cemented her place, so it'll be interesting to see. I see today Kira Caruso's gone back to the NWSL on loan, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I do think that Abby Larkin has won her game time on merit and probably deserved a bit more of the pitch just based on how well she's been playing for Crystal Palace. So I think the most important thing now is those Poland games and how do we approach them? Do we keep our five at the back? I know it's a 3-5, whatever you want to call it. Or do we, yeah. Or do we maybe switch to a four to be a bit more attack minded? Or how do we get the likes of Katie forward more? So I think there's a lot of things for consideration going into those games.
And Karen, what about you?
I think that, like, similarly, the atmosphere within the group seems good. There seems like a good belief. If I was to pick a negative, again, it is squad depth, because dealing with Denise's absence was, it felt huge. You know, we spoke about it a lot, and we felt like, and obviously that's because of how, like, important she is to the group. But beyond that, you're taking any one of the starting 11 out, and maybe barring Abby Larkin, who Scarlett spoke about there, it's a big ask for anyone to come into the team and compete in League A, I think. So obviously it's up to girls to put their hands up for places and stuff like that. But in terms of, like, midfielders, we've had, again, a different person playing in the six again. That's kind of been the talking point over the last year or so. Not being able to bring additional players in around the squad for experience, I think that's a little negative I would take from it. But generally, what I'm taking is that this group have what it takes to grow throughout this campaign to go into a playoff in a very good position if they can replicate what they did. I don't think they should go away too much from what they did. I don't think they should be going out changing, saying, oh, we're going to start playing out from the back. We're going to, like, drag Poland here and there. I still think we should use the approach of caution first and then play to our strengths now, which is the hold up play of the front two, which is very, very good. And then trying to get third man runs from our Denises, from Katie. And that's one thing the fullbacks can probably push on a little bit as well. They might have a little bit more freedom to go forward in the Poland game. So as opposed to changing anything, I think it's given us a platform to build on. And we've gone back to having an identity, and I felt like we'd lost that for a point. So I feel very good about that again. Obviously, it's not an identity where we're like, this is total football and it's beautiful to watch. But we all felt a bit of a buzz after those two games. I certainly did anyway.
Yeah, it's the most positive losses I think I've experienced for us in a long time. And I do think it also shows an interesting settling in the maturity of Carla Ward's tenure as manager, in her knowing the team that's in front of her, her knowing the ability that that team has, and also trusting in it and trusting in the right to say, actually, do you know what? No, this isn't working. I'm gonna change it up to something else, which, you know, is something that potentially we didn't see early in her tenure, but it does feel like she's very much getting to that place now. And we will of course be providing all the entertainment in the lead up to those games against Poland, first one in Gdansk and then to the Aviva. Tickets are on sale at the moment, so would definitely recommend going and getting those as soon as you can. We also said we wanted to take a look at this FAI strategy that was launched today for the next 3 years, and particularly in the context of these games, and something that we spend a lot of time talking about on this podcast, and that is pathways, the word that the FAI love to use but very rarely actually define what that may mean, especially on a women's side. So pathways, player progression, how do we make sure that the squads that we saw out over these last two games, that they're getting the best players that they can, and that we're also developing those players from an early age here, and as the FAI said in this strategy, not having an over reliance on foreign academies or foreign clubs to bring us our best and our brightest. So Karen, I know you have feelings on this. It's one of our favorite topics on this podcast, but initially, I think it's quite obvious from the women's side anyways, and we are going to be talking about it obviously in the context of women and girls football.
Yeah.
So just so I don't have to say that every single time I ask a question, but once again, we're kind of seeing a strategy that doesn't feel like it has a whole lot of clarity in the how. There's
Yeah, that's the big thing. Like they've started to put a few metrics against it. Obviously, they want 30% increased participation. They've put top 15 against us for the ranking of our senior team.
Yeah, so we're 27th at the moment.
We're 27th at the moment, and this is to happen within the next 3 years. I don't. That's a big number to put in, and I don't see how this strategy and that can combine when they're saying we don't want to be over reliant on foreign born players, or we don't want to be reliant on everyone going abroad to develop, because the bridge in order to get to that and have the amount of players from this country in that time to get us to the top 15, that seems unrealistic. Obviously, it's great to have ambition, but that seems a little bit beyond our reach. Obviously, I was saying that we want to get close to where the Netherlands were, and they're what, 11th in Europe or something like that, but it takes a long time to get there, and it takes its development in the league and stuff, and there's the investment in the league, or how the league is seen now even by players in the country, is still seen as a stepping stone to still go. So they said they're going to add another underage age group to the League of Ireland pathway. Obviously, we have the addition of the 23s Development League. Again, I still don't think that that's the bridge, because we were saying that most of, say, anyone, Scarlett, as you were coming up, you were playing in the league since you're 16, 17 years of age. You know, anyone who's at the level who could potentially go into a national team tend to be there, thereabouts, or at least be known at international underage level by the time that they're 17s. Obviously, it's great women can develop later, and it's great to have the opportunity to do that. But it's again giving the elite within that age group the chance to develop into a senior international. That's not part of the pathway that, and obviously, if we sound like a broken record saying it about the 23s, it seems like the most obvious step. It's obviously restricted by budget, and they're trying to do whatever they can within the budget. I'd like to know the breakdown of what it would cost for a 23s team and compare it to what's being put forward here. Again, in terms of the investment, it seems heavily reliant on big consortiums. They've mentioned the American allegiance that Irish Americans have, and hoping for investment from there. That would be interesting if they developed a pathway from here to American collegiate schools back into the Irish national team. But previously, people were deterred from going to America in order to develop. So that's not part of it. If they're not going to do that in Ireland, that could be a very good way of doing it, because we've had a lot of success stories through those means: Megan Campbell, Megan Connolly, Heather Payne, you know. But again, just in terms, it's good to have these things. Just the meat of it, I still don't see how it's going to be done. I don't know if you
Scarlett,
feel
what
the
were
same.
your
I said a lot of words there. But there's a lot of words in here that are good words. It's just how it translates. I'm not fully sure yet.
Scarlett, what were your thoughts when you saw this come through today?
Well, I suppose my initial text into the group chat was kind of the thing that we've been talking about. Karen mentioned it there, is the no mention of another additional underage pathway on under 23s at international level. As Karen mentioned, we've seen the under 23s development league come in for the under 19 league. I do think it was, I suppose, a good enough idea. In UCD, there's a few girls that I played with at college level, and they were unsure of, what lay ahead for them at, 19, 20, when they're too old for the 19s league. So there's now a pathway for people like that. But as Karen said, if you're thinking about making a, like, trying to strive on and make a career out of football, you're breaking into the League of Ireland and you're set up at a younger age. So we're still lacking that. We're still lacking in that area. And even like the international window just gone. We have in Hibs, we have a lot of girls who go away with the Scotland under 23s, and it's a conversation every international window now. It's like, oh, why don't Ireland have an under 23s? And myself and Jess Fitzgerald are sitting there, and we're on, well, it's been the talk of the sort of country for the last few years, and even we'd be discussing it ourselves. It's been a talking point since, what, 5 or 6 years now, and it's always been, yeah, we're gonna sort it. We're gonna, her age group was told that they were gonna get one in, and my age group was told they were gonna get one in, and when you're done, you're 19s, and then there's just nothing. So, it is really disappointing, because I think I've heard that we're the only team in Group A of the Nations, or of the World Cup qualifiers in the Nations League, that don't have an under 23s. So, I even seen that Aaron Clark of it was WNL show. It's League of Ireland. Let's talk League of Ireland, I think now. And he did the stats of there was 5 capped players since the World Cup, and I don't think have it here. They're all none of them came through the League of Ireland pathway. So it's really disappointing. I think Aaron McLaughlin, who's now at Glasgow City, was the last player to come through and get a senior cap, who came through the pathways. And it's really disappointing, because we're going to be relying on the likes of, the UK and America to bring forward our next generation of players, which, I suppose, from all of us who are like Irish natives, it is disappointing. It's something that the men's team have had, and it's now something that's bedding into the women's squad. I think there were 7, I suppose, players starting against France, I think, that weren't Irish born, fully Irish born. So I think we're just going to keep seeing that until there is a change. But for me, it's on a personal level, it's very disappointing. And as well, I think for the future of Irish international football, for women's football, I think it's really disappointing too.
Yeah, it's something that we have spent many years, as you mentioned, Scarlett, talking about on this podcast, shouting into the
I
void.
think even if we can't get into, we'll say the UEFA leagues for the 23s team, you get breaks from your clubs during the international breaks. There's there's however many 21 staff with the senior team at the camp when they're in their home based section of the double header. Could there not be parallel running of sessions, just to utilize the time, utilize the facilities that are already booked in probably for the day? There's ways and means around it, and maybe it's not straight into playing in a competitive environment, but getting together as a group and getting exposure, playing with each other, and then if a couple were ready to step up with the senior team, they already know each other, there's already an understanding. You get confidence from being there and having been around a group. And just to feel like you're actually getting looked at, I think, is important for people's confidence. Because we always say it, like, Scarlett's gone abroad. It's a sacrifice to go abroad. You're leaving behind everything you know, like, to do that in pursuit of really the dream is to represent your country. And it's brilliant. The dream is also to be a professional footballer. But I think any girl who's grown up here wants to put an Irish jersey on. So it's in terms of motivation and continuing to get people to like want to feed into the national team and have a good feeling around it. Even that little step, I don't know, Scarlett, maybe you don't think that's enough, but like it would be something. Something is better than nothing, right?
I think as well, your point on the budget of it, I think that's always been the excuse. But like, even if you're bringing a group of girls into Abbottstown for 3 days and you're doing a training game or whatever against each other, you bring in 22 players, 11 v 11, and even if that's the start, we've seen that with the women's development squad, which lasted a wet week, and there was nothing on it since. So, I think it'll be really interesting to see it. Lizzie Kent's gone in as head of women and girls football. She was with the Ireland under-19s for years, and I worked with her, and you know, she's heard all the sort of quibbles about this.
And
So
she's
I
been in the
wonder if,
league for a long time as well. Like, she
yeah.
obviously
So you'd
steeped
hope
in
that someone
Wexford
who,
there. So she knows what people on the ground are feeling, and she knows what the 19s are feeling, because it is that age group. Like, that's the one who it's toughest on, because there's so much uncertainty after you leave 19s.
And
But you're
even
still
like you,
developing.
yeah, exactly. And you know yourself better than anyone, Karen. Like, to international football, so different to club football. At any, even when you're, if you're playing full time professional football in WSL, it's still so different when you step on an international stage, just tactically, like on a strategic side of things. And even if a player would get called in at 23 years of age for the first time, should, like, they haven't played international football in 4 years. Like, they haven't been sort of subject to that experience, you know.
This is the thing as well. So say, obviously things have like improved exponentially since my day, but say I made my first squad when I was 19. I didn't get my first cap until I was 23. However, I was still in and around the squads for all that time. I was getting the exposure, I was learning. Now, we need more of that. You know, the pool was more limited there, and yeah, I probably fit into the number of players within the squad, but I would say bring in four or five training players per camp. Like, find the budget, find a way to do it within that age group.
And I do understand as well, it's probably difficult with the Nations League because you don't have as many friendlies during a calendar year to bring in, you know, players from the League of Ireland, say, or younger players who are on the brink of things.
So what we're saying is release another strategy next week, please, FAI, and include this so that we feel like the, I suppose, women and girls football is getting the potential, proper potential
Or
pathways and proper
rebut
support.
us, you know, because if they are saying they're going to follow UEFA best practice, women international women's pathway to align with UEFA best practice, if we know, I'm sure somewhere on the best practice it doesn't finish at under 19, you know. So maybe it's in there, maybe it's baked in, we just can't see it yet.
Well,
But like you
considering
say,
as
that's the one thing I was taking a little bit away from the camp. I was like, this team is very good. This 11 players that went out and performed against France are very good. Like Scarlett said, the profile of them is heavily, based on foreign-based development. And they're also not the youngest team ever. While there's still a transition because we lost a lot of leaders, the people who are transitioning in aren't 19, 20-year-olds. You know, they're late 20s, they're experienced players. What comes next? Is it just more and more reliance on the outside, or can we really start to bring up, Scarlett's age group from now and aim for the transition for the next group? Like, what happens in 4 years' time if Katie and Denise are gone? You know what I mean? Like,
don't even whisper such things.
no, but like,
They will be playing in crutches when they're in their
yeah.
80s.
I know. We're probably getting ahead of ourselves, but we kind of need to as well,
Well, no, I don't think we
because we
are though,
didn't win.
because
You know, we didn't beat the bigger teams.
yeah, but it's the
And
same point you're making at the start. Like, if we were to get to 15th position in the FIFA rankings in the next 3 years, that's the position that Australia currently hold. And you look at the squad of players that they have, majority of them are playing in the WSL. There's a couple that kind of come in and out that are home-based players, but you know, majority are playing in the top leagues in Europe and
And
the
the Australian League is
NWSL.
professional, largely professional. So they're night and day.
Yeah, and you even look at population and, like, say, even the boost that women's football got there after the World Cup, you know, in terms of participation figures and just general awareness of the squad. Like, I think after the World Cup, they became the biggest team in the country across all sports, across male and female codes. You know, that's what we're competing with. They're playing consistently at stadiums that are anywhere between 30,000 to 70,000 in their international breaks.
And we're going to have 10 games in the Aviva now, according to this, which is good, I guess.
That's yeah. Pretty well, cool. I think.
You know, I love Tala and I love the atmosphere of Tala. So yeah. If there was an in between, I think that would be great. But I suppose it's to drive the ambition of attendances, which is a big part of this as well.
Yeah. And I also think after having watched that first half against Netherlands, Denise being there or not, I think if we were in a smaller stadium, I don't know, would we have panicked as quickly as we did, or even given Netherlands the amount of space that we gave them at it was far easier for them to pull us apart than it was in a stadium the size of Tala. But yeah, just to me, I'm like, unless there's something very, very clear, the idea that this team that doesn't have a proper development pathway in place at the moment, that doesn't have large gaps, I can't see that. Because like, who are the young players that are coming through at the moment? I know they're out there, but in terms of ones that you think would stick with the league and then also like stick with the league here and then also make the senior national team in the next 3 years.
It's just such a monumental jump as well. You're talking about having to get from where we are to there. We'd need 4 or 5 Katies coming through to like... Maybe they're out there, but
yeah,
it's a big number.
It is a big number considering that we've had one for the last 15 years. Yeah.
If there's positives though, like in it, in terms of wanting more girls registered and increasing attendances, say for the women's Premier Division, because they actually dropped in the last season or so. And that's just true lack of promotion, really, isn't it? It's just...
Do you think it's also partly because the players that everyone knows and recognises, aka the ones that play for the international squad, are playing in the WSL and the Championship?
Yeah, I think people are more likely to throw on a WSL match now because they're seeing their heroes abroad, which is, you know, it's fair enough and it's good to see that in front of you. And it's weird. I think the dynamic of the league is changes so much as well because of the amount of players who leave, because of people going from here to there and everywhere within the league. It's hard to get behind like the rivalries and really get stuck into it. Like, you really are dependent on parents bringing their kids out and consistently trying to grow a love for a team. Whereas I do think a lot of young girls actually, they support players as opposed to teams, which is nice as well to have your heroes and stuff. But it'd be interesting to see how that marketing and communication plan comes about and how effective that can be, because it's a pity for anything to be dropping off when we're always talking about developing.
Yeah, well, there was that interesting conversation with, I don't know, it was on ITV or something around one of the games, and it was Pharaoh Williams and maybe Ellen White, I want to say, talking about the fact that there had been some sort of survey that said, you know, a lot of kids are fans of one of the Lionesses or a couple of the Lionesses rather than teams, and your traditional football supporter being like, this is simply ridiculous. Like, how dare they? But you're like, well, is that not how, unless you have a family tie to a football team, is that not how the majority of people start supporting a club? You know, you see a player that you like and that you're impressed by, and then that's how you end up supporting that team, you know, unless you're like located beside a club. But
so you're saying blame the parents. They didn't instill club mentality in them quickly enough.
They didn't instill absolute horrifying times. Although I think quickly, in my house, that would have left me as an Everton supporter. So at the moment, I'm not too sad about that.
I think, sorry, on that, one thing that I think the League of Ireland could do in terms of a club level is, as you say, like, a lot of young girls look up to, you know, footballers rather than the club. Like, we should be making our players superstars. Like, we should be doing, like, Arsenal's a great, I suppose, example and a great sample of this, of, like, you know, building your players up, building their profiles up, even on like the women's pages around the league. even if you do, like, it's silly things that, you know, young girls get interested in these days. And even like myself, if you stick on a YouTube video of like inside training or like a friend, like a teammates quiz or something like that, those things, you know, they click on, and you know, young girls would be attracted to watching those sort of videos, and then we'll get, you know, we'll start enjoying the personalities of a player, say, and might, you know, force their parents to drive them 200 kilometers down to Ferry Carrick Park on a Saturday afternoon to watch fucking Wexford play Treaty. Like, you know, it's small stuff like that that I think that at club level can be improved an awful lot more to drive attendances. Because as Karen said, they did drop last year, and it's one of those where, you know, you try to latch on to the post World Cup fever, and I think they did for the first season, and then it just dropped off again. So there needs to be more done, I think, at a club level in League of Ireland to keep these attendances going up even more. And to, as I said, I think it's the making the players heroes, I think, is the key to that.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully we will see a bit more of that happen in the coming months and weeks, because we're going to Brazil next year, guys.
Yeah, we are.
We gotta keep the faith on that one. Okay, well, I think we've all had a good rant of this evening, you know, let out some frustrations, focused on some positives. So everything is going well, thankfully, on that side. Karen and Scarlett, thank you very much for joining me this evening. A pleasure, as always. The Koi Gig podcast on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you all again next week with the return of the league. Saw earlier today that London City Lionesses have sold out for the first time ever for their game against Arsenal. So another little positive bit of news to end the podcast with. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and we will be back soon.